Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare Corporation.
Hey, welcome everyone. I'm Nirmit Kataria. I'm a hospitalist / internist and associate chief medical officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital in Memphis.
And hello everyone. I'm Brad Parsons. I'm a vice president of market operations for Baptist.
Guys, well, we promised that he would be back for a third week. And indeed, he is here. Once again, we're excited to have Nigel Thurlow on the podcast. As we've talked about, Nigel is an expert in organizational design. He's an author, a speaker. He's trained hundreds of people in lean methodology. For the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about flow and value in the context of healthcare. And today, we're just going to continue that discussion. So Nigel, once again, oh yeah, I gave you a little spoiler. We will touch on Nigel's theory and how it relates to complex adaptive systems. So Nigel, once again, welcome and thank you.
You know, thank you. And I really appreciate it. And I'm honored and humbled to be talking to you all again. As I was saying in the preamble, I'm facing a bunch of brilliance here, and I'm just a guy who just goes and annoys executives and talks about things that aren't really that important at the end of the day. Which, you know, if you want me to throw in Nigel's law, and I mean L-A-W, not L-O-R-E, although some may think it's L-O-R-E, but Nigel's law was really a proposition. It was not some, you know, asinine sort of conceited statement, which basically, and I think I mentioned this in one of the previous sessions, that, you know, all organizational complexity is human derived. So, and I put organizational complexity because I'm sort of, you know, not trying to deal with climate change and politics and, you know, war and all that type of thing. They're hugely challenging topics. But when we're talking about organizations, we tend to find when we dig under the surface, and you guys are continuous improvement aficionados, and, you know, and our colleague Skip, who we've talked to in the past, is a deep continuous improvement sort of expert. We are really talking about digging under the surface and finding where the waste is, the bureaucracy, the red tape, the needless activity that adds no value, but that nobody requires us to do it. And we tend to find that a lot of organizations build hierarchies and structures. And you may be familiar with Conway's law. You know, if you've got a very complex way of delivery, you've probably got a very complex hierarchy. That's, you know, very bad paraphrasing of it, but there you go. And so we start to look at this and we start to figure out, well, if we remove the people, the problems aren't really very complex at all. They're quite simple. And so that's the test for it. If you remove the people, is the problem still complex within a complexity science definition of complexity or complex? So that's really where I come from that. And invariably, you guys work in a complex business, that, you know, medicine and patient care. But the actual stuff that surrounds it shouldn't be complex, because you got enough to worry about when you're in the OR, you're in ER, or you're treating patients in an outpatient clinic or whatever it is, managing complex conditions. You don't need all the other nonsense that helps you, or supposedly supports how you do what you do, being complex. And we tend to find it actually isn't complex. It's just messy, because humans tend to make things a bit messy.
Well, Nigel, how do you, I mean, Skip's not on today, but Skip, he says time and time again that healthcare is the most complex socio-technical system that there is. And, you know, we spend a lot of time on the technical, but not near as much time on the social, the people aspect.
But the technology is easy to fix.
Exactly. It you know, you input equals output, but with people, it's a lot more messy. But in the context of flow, what are some strategies that organizations can do to manage that human aspect and that human complexity?
Well, there's two words I mentioned to you before we started, which I'll mention again, and they're always challenging to pronounce because I'm not the best linguist, but quantitative and qualitative. So we tend to measure everything on it by quantification. Even the debates I have about probabilistic forecasting in the software world is all a quantification approach. So measuring averages or throughputs or some sort of forecasting that, you know, a probable outcome is X, Y, Z is all based upon quantification. It's not based on quality. Yet when we're talking about healthcare, we're obviously talking about outcomes here. We're talking about hopefully successful outcomes, patients cured, patients remediated, whatever the case may be, so that we have a desirable outcome. But the challenge is measuring outcome is very hard. Now, people will probably hang metrics on things, you know, how many patients did we lose and how many patients did we save, and what sort of protocols that measure certain outcomes that we can actually put a metric on them. That's all good. And please never use NPS in patient healthcare. There's all sorts of reasons why that's just a horrible measure. And I can get into that if you want me to. I can explain it really simply. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good do you think we are? Well, I think you're 8 out of 10. That's awesome. 80%. No, that sucks. But so when I don't know how it works, I don't give you the score you seek. Once I know how it works, you've now biased me, anchored me, as we say, to give you a 9 or a 10. Unless I really hate you and I want to score you low and make a point. But the reality of it is NPS is a flawed measure, and there's all sorts of books written on that stuff out there. But if we start to look at outcomes and how do we measure outcomes effectively, in business, I start to talk about things like customer retention, customer convergence. We use more than one of your services, customer attraction or, you know, acquisition. That's probably not the right sort of measures you want to use in a hospital, or I'm sure they're under the covers somewhere there. You know, if I use UT Southwestern as I do for one particular ailment or one particular medical condition, they want me to use them for others. And because I trust them, they want my services, etc. So a little bit of that convergence is in there. But we need to try and think about what would measure your success. Because we talk about delivering value, flow of value. So, and I gave a broad definition, but basically, how do we flow the value in a way that's unimpeded with no resistance? And it's just like a river free flowing or versions of that. But, you know, that's OK. But we need to really start to say, well, if we were to talk to a patient and say, what does value mean to them? Then I'm assuming, apart from being cured and, you know, no further thing. I had surgery in January this year, and very minor surgery, old man, minor umbilical hernia repair, you know, nothing too dramatic, no mesh, so awesome. Surgeon was brilliant. I was terrified of the anesthesiologist, but he reassured me and pumped my IV full of something that made me feel real happy. So I drifted off real fast with no problem at all. But if you're asking me about value, I wasn't scared in the end. I was terrified before, but I wasn't scared. I was handled really well. I had incredible patient care and bedside manner. And the consultant is head of surgery there, head of trauma surgery. So he was brilliant. And the outcome was it was fixed. The recovery time was within the parameters given to me. The pain threshold was minimal, and it was minimal, and a few things like that. So that's the sort of things I would start to measure successful outcomes. Now, of course, you can start to look at patterns and look at groupings and things of that nature. So you can sort of, and I'm sure, and I know Dr. Kattari, you're a data scientist, so I'm pretty sure these are sorts of some of the things you may look at. I don't know. Let me stop there and ask for your response on that.
Yeah, no, that was great. And I picked up a couple of things that I want to kind of brainstorm and ask you more about. So, and I'll go back to the last thing you mentioned is about customers' perception of value, right? I think a lot of it is driven by their expectation and us meeting their expectation, or clear communication around setting up expectations. So you go service your car, you'll probably know when it will be ready. And if there's a delay, someone will let you know. You're admitted in the hospital, you know you need a CT scan, you don't know whether it will happen in an hour or 2 days or or 24 hours. And so sometimes it's not just the delay, it's not knowing when it will happen. So I think that's a great point you made, is that creating that value setting up expectation and communication is a key piece. The other thing I wanted to ask you really, when you mentioned quality and quantity. So to me, I'm thinking from when you, the quality side is, one is the patient outcome, quality of our care. Other thing is, how do you measure quality in terms of, you know, hospital staff? And that kind of made me think about, you know, what are the key behavioral indicators? So KBIs, not just the KPIs.
Yeah.
I found myself, though, and I want to know your thoughts and others, you know, Dr. Mason and Brad's as well, is that sometimes I feel quantity is easier to measure than quality, but it's the quest to measure and improve quantity can actually help us identify factors that we need to measure in terms of quality.
I think that's a brilliant sort of question and thinking process. And I don't want to date this episode of this podcast, which is being recorded in June 2025, but I've been working with a group of different people representing different ways of measuring flow in the industry to author or at least edit an existing guide to using Kanban in knowledge work. So beyond manufacturing, so software and socio-technology systems, so social systems. And for those that don't know, Kanban just translates to visual board or signboard or billboard is the literal translation. It's what Toyota used to signal workflow in a manufacturing facility in their pull system that's been very famous, the Toyota production system. But outside of that, it's used as a signaling system to signal for work. And so the phrase I always use and the most important thing I urge anybody, including yourselves, to do is to make work visible. If you don't know how you do what you do, you can't improve how you do what you do. Now, and I think I said this in a previous episode with you, people have a perception of how we do what we do. They all know, I mean, if you ask anybody, I mean, if Dr. Parsons or Brad, we said to him in hospital administration, most people who work in administration knows what the hospital does, but they don't really know how we do it, the nuts and bolts, the nitty gritty, the step-by-step boring process, without spending a lot of time immersed at the Gemba. We did talk about this last time. And so I started to sort of, when we started to talk about visualizing work, and that's the whole purpose of a Kanban system in a non-manufacturing context in knowledge work, is making the work visible. Now, you guys are familiar with terms like value stream mapping, which is a thing we do occasionally, but a Kanban sort of visualization does it continuously. You see the work all the time, and you can see at any point in time where the stage of a process or workflow is. And then you start to be able to see the cues. You see the bottlenecks, the constraints and other things. You see them. And therefore, that's where quantification becomes very important, very valuable. What's the average, you know, and you've got to be very careful with these measures and metrics, extremely careful. When you start talking about what's the average cycle time for a patient, well, we're not making widgets in a factory. But, you know, those averages can start to help. Or how many patients in a given period of time, a shift, a day, a week, a month, throughput. Great, we can measure and get averages and numbers, which give us some idea of the flow of volume through our system. What it doesn't do is tell us the complexity of the cases. And what it doesn't do is give us any read of the value of the outcomes. We saw 50 people this week. And so what? So we need to find ways that allow us to take the quantification and use that to help us improve the flow of the process so we can improve the quality of the outcomes we're delivering. So it's not either or, it's both. It's an and, not an or. But the challenge is if you only measure the quantification, then you treat everybody like a widget and a dollar bill. And, you know, and hospitals run to budgets and this constraints, you know, government, you know, payers and patient ability pay and lots of other things. And certain treatments and remedies and processes cost a fortune. So they're in limited supply. And so we have to understand the constraints of the system we're in. And then if we can quantify our capacity, which is what we talk about a lot, how many patients can we see in a given amount of time? How many things can we do in a clinic, be it outpatient, an operating room or whatever? There's a limit to the throughput of those systems and those ways of working. So we can use quantification to understand that. And then we can use Kaizen and other approaches, other, you know, ways of thinking to improve that, to eliminate the non-value-added activity. And I've talked before about type one, type two. Type one says, here's a bunch of stuff that doesn't add value, but you got to do it because the government or some regulator or says you have to do it. Now, remember, it doesn't, the government or regulator doesn't say build a process that sucks. We do that all by ourselves. Right. So the first thing is we need to make sure those processes are good. And then you got type two waste or muda, which is everything else we do that we don't need to do, but we've done it because we've always done it. And some jobs worth, a great English phrase, it's more than my job's worth to change how I do that. So some jobs worth in the system says, I'm not changing that because if you do, I've got no job or that type of thing. And that's where the sort of lean thinking comes in, where we retrain, repurpose, redeploy and leverage. That's the whole concept of Jidoka. We re-leverage that capacity somewhere else. But once you can understand your capacity and once you can understand what limits your capacity, you can then focus on improving that system to increase that capacity. Now, if we've been doing that, we've also learned how to do things better. That will also lead to better qualitative outcomes because we've increased our capacity. We've realized we've learned something about the way we do things. And so it improves our quality. And I wrote something the other day when I was doing this Kanban sort of editing or contribution. And I said, you know, put simply, what is a stable system? Now, there's lots of definitions, you know, Professor Little, Walter Shewhart, Deming, others. But put simply, a system that can consistently meet the demand placed upon it. And I thought that was just the simplest description of a system. If your system isn't meeting the demand that's being placed upon it, then the system isn't stable. It's overwhelmed for a start. Or if it's meeting the demand but is underutilized, then of course that's a different problem. But majority of the time, if we're in healthcare, we're talking about overwhelmed, over-processing, and I know from previous conversations and conversations with others I've spoken to in your industry, most professional medical practitioners spend the most of their time doing stuff that isn't patient care, paperwork, needless process, all sorts of other nonsense that they have to do. Some of it required, necessary for whatever reason, but a lot of it is just doing it because we do it. So I think if we can go into it with that viewpoint, and really start to use quantification to understand the system, but then use that real deep Kaizen continuous improvement mentality and approach to improve the system, you will get qualitative improvements out of the other end. Something like that.
And, you know, something that's very complicated in healthcare is that, you know, we do have quantitative measures. We measure mortality. How many people die when they come into the hospital? And if you just looked at that, I mean, people are going to die in the hospital, that they're going to. And so if you just looked at that outcome, a patient dying in the hospital, that could be seen as a failure. But you could along the way, you could be delivering the best appropriate care at the right time. Patient experience, the family experience may be good. So you're delivering value to that patient and the family, but the ultimate outcome may not be what your desire. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I know I think Brad was wanting to jump in, so I'll give him a moment in a moment. But you know, I start to think of failure demand because you know in outside in manufacturing and in software and other industries, failure demand is the amount of time we waste by attending to defects and rework and things we didn't do right the first time. But when you talk about patient mortality, of course people are going to pass away in hospital because they go there for their final care sometimes, critical illness, heart attacks, you know, aneurysms, you know, final end of life care with cancer and things of that nature. So of course people are going to die. But if you just took that metric in isolation, you'd say, hell, a lot of people die at that hospital. Don't use that hospital, which is, and of course, I know that, and this is where I'll invite Brad in a minute, because I know that people in hospital administration and people are looking at sort of the perception of brand and brand reputation, then you don't want people to be using a measurement like that or a metric like that as a negative for that healthcare facility. So I think what you were just describing, Dr. Mason, is really important, is that when you're talking about the overall life cycle, and I don't mean to use that term, you know, in a bad way, but the overall life cycle of patient care, how are you delivering on that? What is the experience? What is the family's feedback? What is the patient feedback? As well as what are the successes and failures of medical interventions, drugs used, the treatments used, and what have you, and the success of those, because that helps us also to learn. And the medical industry is continuously learning. And I understand it's a litigious world, and there's all sorts of other challenges that people who run these hospitals and care facilities are aware of. But I think that, and I think I used a phrase to you before, if I didn't, I'll introduce it now, Triopticon, which is a phrase from, it's Triopticon, I forget. But it's a phrase from complexity. And my friend Dave Snowden, who's a big complexity guru, taught me this. And that's where you take people from very cognitively diverse backgrounds. So somebody who's never worked as a doctor or as a surgeon, but maybe in hospital administration. Somebody who's worked as a doctor or a surgeon. Somebody maybe a patient advocacy group or somebody in that. Be careful with advocacy groups, I know, but somebody who represents the perception from the patient side, and maybe others as well. Somebody from the payer, taking somebody from the key insurance providers. Now, Triopticon's meant to be three, but, you know, you can stretch your imagination here a bit. But the idea of bringing people from very cognitively diverse backgrounds together is you get very different viewpoints and understanding. And the idea is for them to work collaboratively and collectively together to find consensus ways forward. And I don't mean a debating circle or a knitting circle or tea drinking circle, and it's not this nonsense, and it's not debating who the best game player is in your latest football match, and I say that without referring to which version of football, but the point is this: the idea is to get deep experts who are really passionate about improving things together with very different cognitively diverse backgrounds to come up with ways to move forward from an impasse or a challenge. Because, you know, on one side, we've got to protect the brand, we've got to protect the reputation, we've got to avoid litigation or any untoward things there. And on the other side, you've got somebody saying, well, no, you've got to provide clearness and transparency and openness, or otherwise we can't improve. You can't be empirical, you know, the modern scientific method, if you're not transparent and open. But over there going, no, we can't be. So it's that type of dilemma or dichotomy you're trying to solve for with these types of deep experts working together. Brad, I want to invite you in because I know you've got something to say on some of this, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, Nigel, thank you. And again, I've really enjoyed the dialogue and you know, certainly worthy of multiple episodes of connecting the dots. But, you know, this is so appropriate for where we are as an organization and where we've spent a lot of time. And so, again, and I'm sitting here looking at a copy of your book on my desk and thinking about how do we scale this to where multiple people, even hundreds of people, understand enough to be able to work inside of a system that is really as we're articulating it. I wrestle with this all the time. So I shared, you know, I've been now a student of Lean for 15 plus years and really use it in every day in my work life and in my personal life as well. But I now see that there's so many people that don't understand some of the drivers of how and why. And I'm really passionate about being able to scale that so that we can get sustainable results for our organization. So I'm wondering if you'll help speak to that, because again, on this call, we've all been studying this for a long time and have an appreciation for, and listeners of the podcast have probably heard this a lot. How do you make sure that you make this this understanding easy enough for somebody that is trained as a practitioner or trained as a nurse or trained as a physical therapist can take this and really apply it to their daily work to make their daily work better?
You know, there's a phrase, and we can call it giving permission. And I think I talked about this on one of the previous episodes when we delved a little bit into psychological safety and the ability to say no, the metaphorical Andon cord, which is the you know, the rope down a production line you pull to alert to a problem during manufacturing. Well, I often talk to organizations is to how do you enable that from a metaphorical point of view? How does a very junior person, maybe in a complex surgery in an operating room, you know, shout up no, stop, when they spot something without being in fear of all the repercussions and ramifications of doing that when you've got a chief of surgery in the OR doing the work? Now, I'm sure that those protocols exist in your world, but that's the type of thing we're talking about, because what we need, and there is no way getting away from this, if the people who control the machinery, the people at the top, don't care, it won't work. It's as simple as that. You have to care from the top down. You execute from the bottom up. And that's a lot of people talk about Toyota, top-down command, bottom-up control is the way I used to describe it. But essentially, if the people who are in charge, the CEO, the chairman of the board of directors, whatever the words are that are appropriate in your context, don't care or don't understand, and so and then choose not to care, one or the other. They're either ignorant of it or they are knowledgeable of it and don't care, it's, you know. But if you can get past that and they really care and they really want to make a difference to all the things in the last three episodes of this podcast we've been discussing, then you've got permission. That's the first thing. You've now got permission to do something. Now, it's a complex environment. People are incredibly busy, often overworked, overtired, totally stressed. But you've then got to use a lot of the techniques I described and others will describe in your own experts to make it possible for these people to inform the people who care about what we're trying to improve here of the things they're noticing. Now, today I actually posted on LinkedIn a again, I'm dating the podcast, but, you know, June 2025, I posted a picture of me holding a book on LinkedIn today, because a colleague of mine over in Morocco, somebody I got to know, has written a book on storytelling. One of the most powerful things you will ever learn in what we call sense making in the complexity world, and they're in the books when you dig in, is sense making. And we use storytelling and narrative, often anonymously. There are tools and techniques for doing this. You don't have to pay a lot of money. Or most of it's for free anyway. You just have to be able to go do it. And that allows people to give to tell their stories, to give their narrative about the current context. So you may go into an ER, or you may talk to a physiotherapist and ask them to reflect. You give them a context and ask them to reflect. And they will give a short narrative or a short explanation, a short story. And we often do it anonymously if the environment isn't psychologically safe and people are scared to tell the truth. So we have ways to gather this stuff. But what you do over when you've gathered enough of this, and we use other techniques, what we call signifying questions. We ask questions with where they can answer by just signifying without any bias, not the Likert scale type surveys. Anyway, a combination of these things allows us to detect patterns. So if you start asking people to tell stories and you gather 500 or 1,000 or 10,000, and I've done it with thousands of stories in other organizations, you then, with the analysis, start to see the patterns. You can start to see the problems and the opportunities and the good stuff, not just the bad stuff. We do this really well. So how do we do more of this? And we don't do this. This is where we got problems. So how do we do less of that? And you start to use storytelling and narrative. And my friend had written a book on this. This is why it was relevant to that, the story about posting a selfie with his book today, just to tell the world that. So go look at that when you get time. But just to tell the world that this is a really important technique. And you're in this socio system, this system that's all about people, relationships, behavior, stresses, and all these other things. Storytelling and narrative is incredibly important. And it's been used in healthcare. I did some work with a healthcare authority in Florida, and Dave Snowden and my colleague from the Complexity World, his company, did some work with them and helped them a little bit on this sort of storytelling and narrative. But that's the way you empower and enable people in the organization to share what you need to hear in a very safe way, in a non-confrontational way. And then if you use the expertise to look for the patterns in the, and this is where Dr. Kataria, you, this is your dream, because you're looking at patterns in the stories, in the narrative, in the data, and the signifying questions. We use things called triads, fancy word for triangle. That lean people like a lot of Japanese words, and complexity people like a lot of fancy big words. So, but it's basically, you know, we use these techniques where people signify and we can see the patterns, and then we can look at the clusters of those signification of these answers, and we can dig down, look at the stories and the narratives behind. So we see a pattern, and then we start to say, why do we see that pattern? Then we see the storytelling behind. We go, ooh, that's what it's telling us. And then, and you're looking for outliers as well, weak signals, what we call dark constraints sometimes. You can see the outcome and impact of something, but you can't understand why it's happening. And these techniques help lead us there. And that's the type of thing to get at what's wrong. And I posted something else, a slide I made the other day, just as a hypothesis. I said, if you're in an unpredictable or a complex adaptive system, you can't optimize the whole. This isn't catering where we're producing lots of the same thing repeatedly. It's not a manufacturing line where you take Deming's advice and optimize the whole. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, it's not that simple. So you've got this horrifically complex system that's adapting continuously and changing and evolving. So focus on optimizing the parts of the system and any of the expected interactions, the dependencies, if you like, or the connectivity, the interactions, the interdependencies between them. Optimize the interdependencies and optimize the parts mm-hmm. of the system. And gradually you start to identify ways that you will overall improve the way the system functions. But trying to just go slap lean thinking on the A to Z of healthcare is a fool's errand. You're not going to succeed.
Yeah, Nigel, I appreciate that a lot. It makes me think of several things that have bubbled up for me as we've talked today. I mean, one is our focus of daily management and how we try to get our leaders and really the qualitative, you know, inputs of a team working together on things that help drive performance on their unit. Nermit, but I really, you've kind of helped with some of the performance improvement team lead a group called the Patient Flow Leadership Group. Nigel, you'll appreciate that. And really one of the things that we've done in that group is to articulate key kind of learnings and make sure we define processes and then post them in a way to kind of share the stories so that anybody could grab those key processes. So it's not, you can't kind of improve the whole of patient flow without improving and calling out key processes that are driving performance. So we're really trying to do that in new ways, in ways that, again, we'll call it, you know, in patient flow, you've got this idea that a multidisciplinary meeting of a lot of different stakeholders to talk yeah. about the care of the patient is a critical thing. There should be some things that we hold on to as a standard in a multidisciplinary meeting, but that also doesn't mean that every single multidisciplinary meeting has to look exactly alike. Mm-hmm. And so it's again that push and pull in both end of making sure it fits to the context that we're using it and trying to have the standards and the rigor to call those out, but also the flexibility to ensure that that looks appropriate for a lot of different organizations of different size and scope and across an enterprise. So
you see, it's interesting because you can't standardize the meeting and you can't standardize the output of the meeting, but you can standardize the process of organizing the right meeting.
I love it. Yes.
You see? And yes. And I was writing down here, you know, I was thinking about flow when you're talking about patients, you know, so flow is to ensure a smooth and constraint-free journey through the system for the patient. Something like that is what you need to sort of define, because when you talk about what would flow look like to the patient, they may have a whole bunch of different things they have to do on the same day or over a period of time, but it should be pain-free from not from the point of view of, you know, physical pain, but pain-free from the grind of getting through the whole process. And it should be a smooth journey, an unencumbered flow or smooth journey through your system. And you use words like communication earlier, and I've reiterated this before, it is the most important word. If you want to break down silos and barriers and clear impediments and constraints and what other words we want to use, communication is critical. And you're in a highly interdependent organization that needs a high degree of collaboration. And without communication, that just will not happen.
Go ahead, Dr. Mason.
Now, why don't you give us some closing comments, Nermit?
No, I was going to say, I think you used a word, and that is very interesting and important, is you used the word interdependency, right? So as Brad said, a lot of our work, and if you put it in a story, I think everyone is writing their chapter, right? It's like all departments. But we had to also intentionally make sure not only our deep meetings are multi-department, but their work, but they're also interdepartment, because that's where the connectivity happens. That's where connecting the process and outcome at each department with the organizational outcome, right? So I think human behavior is oftentimes motivated by their behavior success or their department success, but we have to connect that department success with other department success and eventually to organization success. So I think interdependency and communication are two very vital things.
You've just explained why the podcast is called Connecting the Dots. Dr. Mason.
That's right. I tell you what, Nermit, we should have had you on this podcast way before. But guys, what a great, fascinating and complex topic. Unfortunately, we got to bring the discussion to a close. But for you guys out there, I recommend that you pick up a book that Nigel co-authored, The Flow System and The Flow System Playbook. If you want more, you can Google Nigel Thurlow and you can find all sorts of resources on YouTube and almost TED Talks and a lot of interesting stuff. But Nigel, on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, we certainly appreciate you taking out time in your busy schedule over the past 3 weeks. We've thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's been an absolute huge pleasure and I've enjoyed it immensely. And I think it's a really important area that you guys are working in. And I think everything we've talked about should help or be an inspiration or at least spark acquisitive inquiry. And I think that's most important,
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.